Hello, and welcome to the Rights and Wrongs podcast. Today, I'm joined by business consultant and founder of TAP, Linda Guild. We'll be having a discussion on the realities and misconceptions of business management, entrepreneurship, and NGOs. We will also have a side discussion about how COVID-19 will affect the landscape of being an employer, an entrepreneur, and an employee in the near future. I hope you enjoy this week's episode of the Rights and Wrongs podcast. Hello and welcome to the Rights and Wrongs podcast, the podcast where we talk about rights, privileges, and misconceptions. Today, I am joined by Linda Guild. I hope I said that correct. She is a business consultant. I'll let her introduce herself. So, Linda.
Thank you, George, for having me on the podcast. My name is Linda Guild. As he said, I am the CEO of the Guild Associates, which is an association management firm. And I'm also the CEO and founder of TAP, which is the Talented Alliance of Part-Time Professionals, an organization we started for individuals who work part-time and the companies that hire them.
That's a lot. So the main purpose of the Rights and Wrongs podcast that's evolved over time is we like to destroy misconceptions and buzzwords, things that other people might think they understand, but in truth, they probably don't if they're not in that exact field. Is there anything in the business realm, business consulting, that you feel like is a major misconception or a buzzword thrown around way too much?
One of the things that for me is a buzzword that I hate is work-life balance. Your work is part of your life. So I've never quite understood that statement. I feel like people say, oh, if you do this, you'll have better work-life balance. Or if you do that, you'll have better work-life balance. Or if you start a business, you can control your work-life balance. And to me, if you're enjoying your work, it's part of your life and it's creating a schedule that works for you to create balance. So you can create balance and timing, but that whole concept of it, that it's two separate issues. To me, work is not separate from your life, which is one of those kind of misconceptions. The other that came to mind when we talked about this is it's a misconception that starting your own business makes for a better work-life balance. I think a lot of times when someone starts their own business, then they suddenly are working longer hours, harder than they ever did when they worked for someone else. And they suddenly are like, I might be home. I might be able to control. They think they can control it, but they haven't set boundaries. They haven't done things to control their time flow. So they, you know, like I said, they start a business and they think, oh, this is going to solve my issues and I'm going to be home more and I'm going to have more of a personal life. And they suddenly are working instead of 40 hours a week, they're working 60 hours a week or they're working 70 hours a week. So I feel like that buzzword, the phrase is thrown in with that as well.
So it's interesting to talk about that because a lot of times when I hear people use the term, a lot of business gurus be like, oh, if you follow this step, you'll get a better work at home life balance. But the key to the whole entire thing, like I heard someone say this, the key to finding a better homework balance is to make sure you find a job that you love, because if you love your job, you're never going to work a day in your life. But that almost seems like two counterproductive things. Like, how can you have a homework balance life if you don't think you're working? But I think that also comes down to a lot of people. You need to find a homework balance if it's a job that you hate or a job that you don't enjoy. Because I've worked security, and security is a job. It's a means to an end. And then that's about it. Like, that's where you need to find your balance for hours and stuff. But it is true. If you start your own business or you're working, when I was working as a veteran advocate, that's a job you can't just leave. Like a security work, you can leave at work. Like I can't bring that place I'm guarding back home. But when you're doing other jobs, such as creating or working your own business or veteran advocacy work or law enforcement and stuff like that, you shouldn't bring it home with you, but that's almost impossible not to. So that seems like a strange.
Right. And I think, you know, to your point, you brought up the fact of, if you've worked, that's another phrase, if you love what you do, you'll never work another day in your life. Well, I think people need a break just mentally. So I think it's important to take time and go do something else because you recharge, you re-energize. If all I'm doing is working on TAP, I like coming to work. I enjoy my job and I can't imagine not working. You know, win the lottery. What do you want to do? I want to do some stuff for the company, but I still like to go play golf. I still like to do projects around the house. I still like to spend time with my husband, right? So you still need the boundaries. If you have someone else in your life, whether it's an animal, whether it's kids, whether it's a spouse and friends, if you can love your job, but if all you're doing is that work, you probably actually aren't going to grow as much too, because you're not learning from other people. You're not engaging. You're not allowing your time to, your space to be creative. Because it's amazing how when you step away from your job in your day to day, all of a sudden something will trigger or something will click. Like, you know, something from this podcast when I'm driving home, you know, something we talk about, I might go, oh man, I should have talked about this, or wow, he made me think about this and I should take action on that. Right. But if I'm in the weeds doing the work, I can't grow that way.
It's fascinating you talk about that, especially about like trying to make sure you separate yourself too, because luckily I have a friend, Nell, who's my editor, and he takes over the editing, so all I have to do is producing now. But mm-hmm. now that I'm no longer spending those 2 or 3 hours per episode listening over my voice, because anyone that does audio editing, it's not a one through. You're listening to that same episode 5 or 6 times before you're done. And it's so much nicer that I actually enjoy podcasting now that I'm just producing, which I still have to do a once over or twice over as the producer, as the editor, because I have to add certain things. But I'm not listening to it that 7 times, and it makes me enjoy it more.
Yep.
But I think that's another huge part when you're doing creating your own business, which podcasting kind of is. I know people might be like, that's not, it's a hobby. It's like, you're doing a lot. You're doing marketing. I'm doing payments to tax and all like other stuff. There is that other fact, which I was going to ask you, is what advice do you have for people to like release control of their businesses and power? Because like that segment I noticed for me, it was like kind of nice. I had trouble at first giving editing power to someone else. And like I was overlooking a shoulder a lot more than I should have because I wanted to be a controller, but I've learned to back off and like I trust them. It's better to have just do the producing edit. I wasn't sure if you had thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think number one, you just actually hit on something that's awesome. You said you're enjoying it more, right? Now that I don't have to do this, starting from a point of trust, number one, that if you're going to hire someone, you're hiring them because you're trusting them to do something. And hopefully what you're doing is you're hiring someone that either you can train to be really good at what you're hiring them for, or they come in with that expertise. Not all industries, you know, people have to learn from somewhere, and some people like to train them in their method. But if you create a structure and a process for them and check in, so it's, you know, one of my things is it's okay to fail, but I don't like my staff to fail publicly. So they can make as many mistakes around here, but we don't want it to be on something that's going out to 300 people or 1,000 people so they can see the mistake. So yeah, to me, it's finding the people that you trust. There's a difference between trusting them and just letting it go. You would never put out your podcast without ever listening to it again after Nell edited it.
No, because that right? It's my voice and name on it.
Bingo. So you're trusting him to do the work, and you're trusting that when it comes to you, you're just doing a final listen through to see if you're picking something up that he doesn't. But, you know, I think that control piece, if you think of it from the perspective of how much does it free you? So in a business, when you start your own business, all of a sudden if you're doing the podcast and are monetizing it, you might have to be getting advertisers. Now there's an income stream. Now there's budgeting that happens. You have a timeline for releasing it. I mean, there's all sorts. You could have a virtual assistant that's scheduling your guests, doing some of the pre-conversations with them. There's a lot of steps that go into anything, and people forget that. When they work at a job, you know, your security guard, you came in and you had a narrow piece, but there's someone else that's doing payroll for you, someone else that's doing benefits, maintaining the building that you were doing security for, all of that. And when you're running your own business, all of a sudden you're like, wow, there's a lot more. And if that person's doing that for me, they're freeing up my time. If you're better at, you know, if Nelby is really good at editing, he can do it in less time than you can, most likely.
Well, that's exactly what it is. And like, yeah, I was teaching him how to do it because he was a novice, but he's getting better at it. But that's the only, and it's also, he's getting slightly faster at it and better at certain things than I am, because that's the only part of the production he focuses on.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets to have that narrow, where myself as the business head or founder, I have to work on the marketing, I have to do the website design, I have to do, and I think that's where a lot of people don't realize when they start a business. Like they have a slight idea, or I had a slight idea. It's like, oh, I'm going to have to learn these other aspects of the corporation, but I didn't realize how deep of a dive you're going into understanding marketing or search engine optimization or things that I never even thought existed.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, I heard someone that I listened to, he did the analogy between the online business space and brick and mortar. And so if you were to open a pizza shop, you would never just be like, okay, I'm going to open a pizza shop tomorrow, right? Because you would be like, I need a building. I need ingredients. I need ovens. I need to have the electrical. I need to have start marketing, figure out my pricing, my budget, staffing, et cetera, et cetera. But oftentimes I think when you're doing service-based, you don't necessarily stop and build that same plan out, and it can blindside you, right? You're like, oh, I recorded the podcast. Now what? You know, how do I keep it going? How do I search engine optimization, marketing, content creation? You can do your podcast and no one can hear of it, or you can get on Matchmaker, talk to your friends, put it on Facebook.
Yeah, and then also comes to like sponsorships and like how do you make money off of it because of monetization. But then there's the whole entire issue of do you want to monetize through other people, because then you're giving power, or now they have power.
Right.
And yeah, like they might say. Yeah, they might have to say it's like if I let company X on and company X sells a specific item, which is a politicized item, or it comes out that their CEO was against policy Z, and like now that's attached. It's a very strange thing that people don't think about. But going back to that, we did slightly talk about, and this is something I've talked on other podcasts, when you're working with other people, the general populace, when it comes to business, and you've worked with board of managers for businesses, I've worked with board of managers for organizations such as the SAR. Mm-hmm. What are those concepts and ideas that we're talking about that the people making the decisions seem to always lack experience in something? We were kind of talking about this when it came to like methodology of research or where data comes from. Is there anything else?
Yeah, I mean, I think that number one, managers are not often trained to be managers. You know, someone gets promoted because they're good at whatever X. So like say an engineering firm, the head of engineering may never be trained as a manager. They got promoted because they were a great engineer. And so that they don't have some of the soft skills. Like communication is such a key component of business. And oftentimes we in the business world don't stop and train on it. What does good communication mean with our customers and clients and the outside public and our staff? Because when you send an email, I mean, we've all done this, whether it's personal or professional, you send an email or you receive an email or a text and you're like, are they mad? Are they okay with this? Like you're trying to figure out tone, right? And the language. And if you don't know your audience working with a board, it's like that making sure that communication is spot on can get you through everything. So when you're like, you're working with Nell, you're knowing he's in training mode, right? And you're knowing that he's gaining. So you're doing good communication. So you, neither one gets frustrated in the process. And when I work with my board, I work with a bunch of board of directors, and I find that the clearer I am with them about what I need, what is going to be and what, how they are like during a board meeting, what do we want to accomplish? When does it need to be done by, the better. I think for an example, one of the things I say to my staff is that if someone calls and asks for something and you say, oh, I'll get right to it, I'll get that right to you, but you really aren't going to, you're in trouble. But if you say, hey, you know, great, do you mind if I send that to you tomorrow? You've set an expectation by communicating that you're not going to do it when you hang up. Now they're not going to email you in a half an hour and going, I didn't get X, Y, or Z, yeah. Which happens all the time. And you're like, I just hung up the phone with you. Like, give me a second.
I think is also very important too when you talk about communication is something I've learned, especially coming from military backgrounds and working, I was trained as a welder and trained as an electrical engineer, working security and now doing business. There's languages within fields, which a lot yep. of people don't recognize. I'm sure if anyone listens to my podcast, every once in a while, like I have to stop someone I talk to because we might be in a similar field. And they get into very specific details or shorthand or say something that I understand where they're going from. But if you're not familiar with that field, he might have said this, meaning this, but you heard that. Mm-hmm. And you have to really catch yourself. And also, every human has their own language. And this is like an arguable thing, but like I come from Boston. I've lived in North Carolina. I now live in Glasgow. I've been around the world. I've picked up parts of communication and terms from all those different places. Where here, even in the UK, I'll have a conversation with a friend. I will say something that I think is clear English. They have no idea what I just said.
Yep.
Like trying to explain to my friend that I was on the Rotary. Like, hey, I'll meet you at this part of the Rotary. There's rotaries, and if anyone's listening, rotary is the term in Boston we use for a roundabout, which I find weird. Everyone yells at us because we call them rotaries, but we're the only people in the country that seem to have them. Everyone else calls it roundabouts, but that's what they call it here in England. But like a simple mistake like that can throw you off, and that happens in business a lot, especially when I'm working with something like, hey, I'll have my editor look at that. I have to make sure I'm talking about a script editor or an audio editor, or when you're talking about legal terms, or it's a whole entire mess of communication, which is really good when you get onto. But also reminds me of what advice do you have for people that find themselves not trained as a manager, but now in that manager role? the do's and don'ts if you have?
Oh, a big one is to find a mentor or to find a peer group. So you never, oftentimes, unfortunately, within a company, you don't want to seem like you don't know what you're doing. So some companies are great and there'll be other managers that and other people that you can turn to and ask that question and say like, hey, I'm supposed to create an agenda for a meeting and I've never run a meeting before. How do I do this? Right. But if not, there's professional associations. There are business networking groups. Go and meet people because what you can do, and I've done this with my friends that I've met through the years, is you pick up the phone or you send an email and say, I have a really dumb question. And it's not dumb because I'm asking it, but I'm embarrassed that I don't know you kind of get embarrassed that you don't know the answer, but you want to talk it through with someone. And so the more that you can learn how to be a manager and that, number one, you don't have all the answers. You can talk to your team sometimes. Like sometimes in a team meeting, you can say, hey, we need to get this done. I'd like to hear from you some ideas of how do we meet this deadline? Because your team may have some great ideas that you don't. So don't think you need to know all the answers. You just need to understand enough of the moving parts. Like if you need to run a meeting, you need to figure out how to get trained to run a meeting. Like you can't turn to your team and be like, I don't know how to run a meeting. What do you guys think? That's not going to work. But you can, you know, if you're running a team, you said you did electrical engineering. And if you worked with another team, like a whole team, your manager may say, we have a deadline to create X product by such and such a date. And, you know, he might have things in mind, but it's okay to brainstorm with your team. Right? Because now everyone else is going to buy into that and learn from it. So I think it's twofold is you don't have to have all the answers, but you need to want to be able to learn and listen to your team because it's amazing what the people you hired them or not, what the people that work with you know. You know, does everyone that works with you know your background? Like you come to it with, you know, electrical engineering, just being a security guard may give you insight into something that someone might not think, right?
Well, that teaches you tact to a whole another level of how to speak to, because you learn tact in the military, but like tact talking to a superior or tact talking to someone that's not willing to understand that they don't know what's going on, that's a whole another level, which you can bring into business. If someone, and that is business, trying to explain to someone, half the time I've learned, they have a preconception of what they expect from you and you have to tell them that's wrong. But at the same point, you have the idea the customer is always right. Which is not always the case.
I agree with that one. And that can be something that, you know, I think a good manager like cares about their employees and learns how to work with their employees and comes in and listens to people. I mean, I think a really key component to a good leader and manager is good listening skills. Because if you are struggling using your podcast, if what was holding you up was the editing and I'm your manager and I'm not listening to you, I may not know that that's a holdup for you, right? And if Nell's on our team already and he has an interest in learning it, it's like, well, maybe there's a way to partner them. Or maybe you guys come together and say, hey, can we split this and I can take this off his plate.
True. And it's also, you made a really good point though, which I've never made that connection before. I know I like go back to military a lot, but like, that was a huge part of my training of management was I was a non-commissioned officer. Mm-hmm. But enlisted personnel, we are trained to be a subordinate at boot camp. The point of boot camp is you are being trained to be a subordinate. But in 4 years, you might be a corporal or a sergeant, which now you're a mid-level manager. And you have to find a good role model. But most of those role models are drill instructors. Which drill instructors are really good at their jobs, but they're not the best managers. And that's where, especially in the Marine Corps, you have a management style of screaming and yelling at people in public, mm-hmm. which is another management style. You don't always want to scream at someone. But the difference is when you look at officers go to officer candidate school. Enlisted are trained to be subordinates. Officers are trained to be managers.
Yep.
And you don't ever have officers screaming at people because even though they had their drill instructors were screaming at them, they were know that this was because they were doing something wrong in a military combat, but they're also taught how to manage. And I think that's something that's really important about, one, have a mentor, and just because someone is a mentor in a level of management, be aware of their skills, learn things they are. Luckily for me, how my voice goes, the louder I yell, the higher pitch my voice becomes. So that's not a very intimidating thing. So I learned to use more other tools, come over, talk down. I never like being screamed at. I'm not going to scream at other people. But that's a huge thing when you talk about management. You said find
a mentor, but make sure that mentor knows is a good mentor worth mentoring. Just because they have people following them and that style works for them doesn't always mean it will work for you. And I think huge.
Yeah, I think that's a huge point. And I think that's true in business in general, is one size doesn't fit all. So how a good example is, I had a friend that was a trainer, went and trained on their product and hired someone, someone else got hired and he was asked to train her. And the first time she went out, she tried to be more like him. And then she realized, wait a minute, that doesn't work for me. She had a different style. So she was a great trainer. He's a good trainer, but she was true to her. She took the good things of him, like, he was well prepared and did, so there's similarities, and both, if you sent him into a company, both would get high marks. But when she tried to make jokes like he did, it just fell flat because it didn't make any sense for her. It wasn't her personality. And that's what he said to her, is take the material and make it your own. Right?
Which you really have to do for some, because some people just aren't good at joke telling either.
Yeah. And it doesn't work for a lot of people. Same with on the phone. I think you want everyone to be pleasant, but how much they interact and their style of interaction is going to be different if you're in customer service, right? So you want your team to be, to have listened to the customer, to have heard their issues, but how the language and the phrasing that I might use is going to be different than someone else on my team. And I think those are the things that are okay. And same with, to your point, when you get a mentor, it's not a mentor to say, do A, B, and C. It's a good mentor is kind of that person you can bounce an idea off of or talk it through. And it's going to help you develop to the next stage or resolve an issue. I mean, my biggest mentor was my dad, and because he was the owner of our company, and I would just go in and be like, okay, this just happened. I just need to talk it out. Because oftentimes the answer's in you, but it needs to come out in that conversation.
Oh, I do the same thing. My parents, I probably call them before a lot of ideas when I have things. And it's not like, and a lot of it is just bouncing ideas off. I think that's a huge thing when people don't understand with mentorship. When people have this idea, you go to a mentor, you ask for wisdom and they give you wisdom. It's like, no, like even if they disagree with you on something, the fact that you've realized that you feel strongly enough to disagree with them, you've already decided where you're going with that. That's an important role, but that goes into a whole entire management
view of a lot of things. And I think with the mentor, I mean, I think what's really powerful too is they can also say, hey, I'm hearing you. I'm going to give you I did X and this is why it didn't work for me. So I just want to let you know that, because some of that been there, done that doesn't mean you can't try it. But if you've never talked to someone that's done any of those things, you don't get that perspective. And that can be the same thing of, hey, did you think of applying for this promotion? Or did you think about handling it this way and it gets you a raise, or, sharing this? I mean, it can be really positive things that they can just kind of help you think through in a way that you might never have come up with on your own if you weren't exposed to something or your company doesn't handle it that way.
I think also brings us into the next question I was going to we're going to talk about. We talked a little bit before about this. When it comes to creating an idea, if you want to start a business, whether we'll get into NGOs in a little bit down, because I'm sure a lot of my human rights friends are going to be more curious about NGO points. But when it comes to when you come up with an idea or management or creating your own business, a lot of times it's great you want to start your own business, but sometimes maybe don't start your own business, but try and work within another system, which there are certain cases where me and Chris Rossi were talking about with veteran advocacy groups. There's so many veteran advocacy groups. You creating another one only actually may hurt the situation that you're trying to start, or you might be dooming yourself to fail. Because you use the perfect example of a pizzeria. I think pizzerias are one of, if I'm not mistaken, I might have read about it, pizzerias are one of the most likely businesses to fail out of restaurants, because it's one of the fastest growing, and one of restaurants have a hard issue, but pizzerias are definitely one because there are just so many of them.
Yep.
Where if you like businesses and you want to get a pizzeria, you might be better off franchising off an established pizzeria or another organization. But this also goes back to mentorship, where I think it's also important to not always look at other groups, from my personal experience, as competition. because most of my mentors and collaborators are other podcasters in similar fields. And I've learned not looking like I have to beat them for numbers or I'm competing for their audience. We collaborate audiences or like, okay, why did you do this? Why did you do that? I have an interview with this person. You've interviewed similar people. How did you go about it? And I think that's a whole nother way for business to help build each other up. But when it comes to brick and mortar or other business, it seems, this is an outsider perspective, but it seems like they rather attack similar groups because they want their customer base. They don't want to.
And I agree that, you know, there's a lot of competition in business and there's a feeling that can be one of the ways to go. I think in, especially in the service industries. So, you know, my company is service, right? A consulting or an association management company. We're serving organizations. TAP is service. I want my competitors, I'm going to put it, that in quotes, to be good at what they do. I think there's a lot of business out there and I can't service everyone. The pizzeria shop can't service everyone. Your car dealership can't, you know, they may want all the business, but let's face it, in the Boston area, if you're going to go buy a car, one dealership cannot service Boston. It's impossible. Like,
don't tell Quark that. He'll, because he's trying.
Don't tell Quark. Don't tell Herb Chambers. But that's, I'm saying one, like one point of sale. There has to be more. And you, when you think about it, if someone's had a bad experience somewhere, you go into the next place wary, right? So if you've gone into, we'll do pizza shops because it feels very generic right now. If you go into a pizza shop and they're friendly, they make sure they listen to what you want on your pizza and all of that, you're like, great, I'll tell my friends. And the pizza tastes good. That has to work. But if you go into another one and it's just like, yeah, what do you want? Okay, here. I don't care. Like, it just seemed like you wanted that. And you're like, yeah, the pizza was, and even if the pizza is really good, if you walked in and felt like you were bothering them, you know, like, I know my job is to make you a pizza, but it's a pain. I don't really want to make you the pizza. You don't want to go back, right?
Which is also a good point you're bringing up too, is even though you're representing yourself, you're also representing the entire industry. And mm-hmm. I noticed that moving here and also other ways, there's certain types of food where like friends here in Scotland, they might not get the same kind of ethnic or another national food. So their idea of wings, like I have certain friends here in the UK that have it's hard to find good wings in the UK. I usually make them myself, but they have, because of the fact that there's not really good wings, mm-hmm. then they are like, wings are bad. It's like, no, you've only had this whole other thing. But if they went anywhere else, they would never have. I know that's a very generic, we're talking a lot of food, but like, that's the best way to look at it. So you being a consultant, if they have a bad experience with you, they might never go to a consultant again. If they have a bad experience with me as a podcast host, they'll never go on another podcast again.
Or they come with a very different perspective. So instead of coming, you asked earlier about when you're hiring someone, right? Or how do you lose control, relinquish control? If you've had a bad experience, you're less apt to do it as gracefully and with trust. You come at it with, I had a bad experience, but I need someone. I'm going to do this a little bit arm's length. I'm not going to be as trusting. I'm expecting that you're going to screw up, or I'm expecting that you're going to make it difficult for me, or I'm expecting fill in the blank from what happened before. You know, so that's why I want in the association management world and or the type of organizations I work with, I want people to say, I had a great experience, whether I'm the best fit for them or not, because there are associations that aren't the right fit for us. We don't do medical associations, for example. It's just not, we don't have enough knowledge. It's not our field. And there's companies that specialize in that. And, you know, I've had conversations with organizations that have come to us and said, you know, they've been referred to us by someone. And I've said just what I'm saying to you now. I want you to find the right fit. I want you to find the company that will service you the way you need to be serviced. And if that's not my company, I'm okay with that, because we're going to be happier in the end. You're going to be happy with who you hire. And I'm not going to have a client that we both kind of knew it wasn't the right fit. Right. So,
which is,
you know, if you're running a business, it's okay to not take a customer.
Which I think a lot of people don't understand like they want to retain and make everyone happy, which most people want to make other people happy. But the idea that you can't make them happy, I think, is foreign to a lot of people. I deal with a lot of people ask to come on the podcast, and I'm like, I'm not the person you want to interview you. Like, I have no idea what you're talking about, or And it's not that I don't have want to learn about it. It's just like I don't know enough. In the same situation you're talking about as working with a client, that if you're not in that industry or know that industry, I hate to say it, but like coming on would be a waste of time. Or you're saying like hiring me, you're not going to get referrals out of this because you're not going to be able to put your best foot forward.
And we're not going to enjoy it. Like, so, you know, for me, as I'm building a company, and building a company is, I mean, our business, my business is, the association management company is almost 90 years old, and I'm still building a business. I want a business that I still want to come to work with, which means I want associations that I know that we're going to do a great job for, that we enjoy spending time with their members. And it's in our quote unquote wheelhouse. It's in our, in an area of expertise where we can add value to them. And there's work that we can do for other groups that we've, you know, we may have chosen not to, or they may not have chosen us, that, yeah, we could do the work, but you kind of go, do I want to answer the phone? Or it's on my list. Can I push it down on my list? And that's never good. I think in life, you want to enjoy 90% of your, what you're doing. There's always going to be something you don't want to do, but you know, even if it's having to walk the dog at lunchtime in the cold, you know, if I'm, there may be some part, like, you know, whether it's owning a dog or running a business, there's always some piece you don't like as much. But I think one of the things, to your point, if you want to people please, sometimes the things that you can do the best is saying goodbye or saying no. It can be the best to please the other person, because it's saying that you want the best for them. You want them to have a good fit. You want them to have a good experience. You want them to grow. And if you're not the person to do that, or the company to do that, recognizing that is powerful.
Which is also, it goes into what I like to call third party networking as well. Because you, as you said, if someone calls you, you want to make sure if you can't help them, you can push them to the right person. So mm-hmm. if they have an issue again later that you might be able to, they're going to call you first because you have the answers and willing to say, I'm not right for you. But at the same point, when someone asks, and most websites will do this, who referred you? They're curious where you're coming from. Did you just come off the street, or did you get referred? And if you referred them to the, you, they might, that company might learn more about your industry. Like, oh, you're better at this. And someone asks a question, well, you could try these people. And there's a mm-hmm. there's a networking build there. And that can go in so many different businesses. Certain ones that's not going to work out, but because they want a captive audience. But in models such as the service industry, I think that is perfect, because you're trying to help them. And even if you can't help them, you put them in the right direction.
Right.
That's helping them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So exactly. The last, not the last thing, but the next thing I wanted to go about is you've been involved in creating 5 businesses. So
yep.
3 for profit, 2 nonprofit, or did I mix those up?
No, you're correct. I had to think about it.
So you've worked with a few different things. Me coming from a human rights background, and I'm sure you've noticed with how everything's going with politics right now, NGOs are falling apart because they're not getting the donations or they're not hiring. So a lot of people that are in my field are looking to create their own NGOs. Quite a lot of my peers have created their own NGOs, such as a friend from Southeast Asia created CHIRA, which is like a woman's activist group for rights over there. What advice would you have for people starting an NGO on like how to know what the best business model is?
So in the United States, some of it is dictated by the IRS. So there, a nonprofit in the US is falls into what's called a 501c. And most people think of a 501c3 as your charity. So it's your Boys and Girls Clubs, it's the Shelter for the Animals. And it's the one that can receive money for donations and doesn't do much in the form of lobbying. Like they're limited in how much political activism they can do. And they have to fall into certain categories, like that they're doing education, that they're doing public welfare. They can be a hospital, healthcare, but there's a list that the government provides. A couple of things when people are thinking about it, and we touched on some of this earlier, really is you do need to know who else is in the field, because you are competing for donors. And if you and I both start an organization for a shelter for pets in the same city and this or town, let's do town, and the town has 15,000 people and everything's really spread out, it makes zero sense. One of us is going to be successful, or we're both going to be kind of because we're not going to get the revenue in. So my advice is A, stop and say, okay, if I want to start an NGO or a nonprofit, why do I want to start it? Where's the gap that I'm seeing that I'm filling? is there one? And the gap can be, hey, there's a great, again, using the shelter because it's an easy, you know, an animal shelter. There isn't one in our area, right? And we want one. But if there's two, then figure out how to partner with them. You know, how can you work with them to achieve it? Or maybe they create something that's connected, like your friend in Southeast Asia. It sounds like, is this she?
Yes, she.
It sounds like she was filling a need that didn't exist. And so now she has a mission and a message that she can take out that's going to help attract volunteers. It's going to help attract donors, build a board of directors, a nonprofit here. It's interesting because you can make a profit. Number one, a nonprofit doesn't mean you don't make a profit. It just means it doesn't go back to shareholders, and you can be very successful. It's mission driven. It's understanding, you know, who your potential donors are, where your revenue sources are, and in the States, what paperwork you need to do to maintain. It's a designation that's conferred on you. You can't just say, oh, I'm a nonprofit today.
Well, I think it's also good. You had a really big misconception with nonprofits, where I've always heard people complain about CEOs making X amount of money, or, oh, why is this employee? Like, if you work for a nonprofit, you're supposed to be a volunteer. Like, when nonprofits started in the United States, it was mainly like trust fund babies and philanthropists that could live off their own money. That's not the average person now. Like, I have a human rights degree. That'd be great if I could volunteer my time 100% to do it, kind of, and with a podcast. But I don't have a trust fund. Like, I need to make money. So that's like a one major misconception when people see that, like, if you have a CEO making $200,000 for something, but if it's huge as the American Red Cross, that's fine. If they're making like $6 million a CEO, okay, then there's something, raise an eyebrow. But if you're running an organization that big, you deserve that for time. And
it's interesting because in the U.S., all of that's public. That's the other piece. If you're a nonprofit in a 501c3, your tax returns are public. And so any employee that makes over $100,000 gets listed on their tax return. So you could see what organizations that's true for, but they have to, it's great that they're raising that kind of money, but they also have to prove that they're actually putting money into their cause. So the shelter has to show that, hey, we're maintaining a building. We've placed this number of pets. We've done X, Y, and Z, you know, and that's where our money, our donations are going. And donors are getting more savvy, right? So to your point, people get more wary with the big ones. And when they hear about a big CEO and they're saying, but where did the money actually go that I gave?
A big one that pops into mind is the Wounded Warrior Project. Yep. Was a huge one. And like, the weird thing is a lot of veterans were crying wolf years before that. Like, don't go to them because they collect all this money and then you ask for help and they send you a t-shirt and a hat. And like, where's all this millions of dollars of money going? Mm-hmm. Then we found out they were going and spending on elaborate vacations and whatnot. But there's another big point that we were kind of skirting around, which I think is really important that people also realize, is you might be very passionate about a cause for an NGO or creating a business or something like that, and you see a void, but that void might not necessarily need a whole new business of its own. Like, we used the example of shelters. Okay, you might have a shelter in your area and they only do cats and dogs, but they don't do reptiles or they don't do rabbits or whatever. It's a certain thing that you want. Could you start your own that's only that? Yes, but you might, until you talk to people, they might be open to that idea and not even realize that that's a void that needs to be filled. Because as we said, as business creators, you and I are so stuck into day-to-day operations of our little world. I have to reach out for politics and stuff like that, but other little nuances might just fly right under me or right over me, and I just don't have the time to even stop to look for it. So if you have an idea, sorry.
Yeah, and to your point, by doing that, you may be happier, right? So now you're focusing on the niche you want, and someone else may be doing the part that you don't, which may be raising the money, right? So you're servicing and taking care of those bunnies and reptiles and horses and goats and whatever else we could come up with that aren't in the shelter. And, you know, there's a farm, there are ones up here that do that. And you're part of that piece of it, but you don't have to worry about meeting with the board of directors and filing the taxes and some of the other pieces of it. So you actually get to do what you want, like what you love, right?
Yeah, you don't have to learn all the stuff that you and I've had to learn starting our own.
Exactly.
It's not all that fun. It's exciting, but not always fun.
Well, it's not. I mean, I think that's, you know, one of your misconceptions, I think, that's out there, and especially in the social media and people in the online space. oh, if you do this, you'll make money quickly, or it's so easy. Anyone can start their online business, build this funnel, do this, and you're going to be making six figures. You're going to be making, well, I bet you that the majority of people that try sink tons of money in. They don't know how to execute. They haven't set up a formula, and they're sitting back and going, huh. And if you're doing bricks and mortar, you need to be ready to have your doors open for a year, non-pandemic times, oftentimes to turn a decent profit. And I think that's the thing people don't tell anyone, that like, hey, starting a business, you may not be paying yourself very quickly. You know, long term, you might get a great salary. Short term, well, that's kind of why you get the big salary later.
It's a gamble. Yourself back. It's a gamble. But I'm going to stop you right there for a moment. So we're 50 minutes in. This is usually the time that I invite any of the live audience. If you're not listening to this live and you're listening to this on the podcast, I always say that on Twitter and on the website, there's a schedule. So if you want to join, you can have an opportunity to ask people such as Linda questions on the podcast. So I'm going to open that up for anyone live listening to ask you a question. And while they're preparing, or if they're going to ask a question, did you want to tell us about your business, TAP?
Sure. So as I said in my introduction, TAP is the Talented Alliance of Part-Time Professionals. We are an organization for individuals who work part-time or want to work part-time and the companies that employ them. Example for both sides, we have a job board. So if someone is thinking that they want to work part-time and see what types of companies, and you can work for any different type of company, it's not just retail, then you can go to taponline.net. And there's a link to the job board right there. You could post your resume. You can search job. And both of those are free for someone to do. And we started it because we saw in that there was kind of this gap out there. There's 17 million Americans who work part-time. But, you know, if you decide you wanted to work part-time, you may not know where to start. You know, you could think of retail as something part-time, but you're like, but I have a lot of skills. How do I use my skills? And I think companies also have that gap of how do I find that qualified part-time that's not entry-level, that's not temporary. Those are kind of my two big misconceptions about part-time, is that a part-time person is only working part-time because they're entry-level or short-term. I had someone doing all my accounting for 5 years. She worked 20 hours a week for 5 years and she had paid time off and benefits and all of that, and was a valued member of my staff. It was awesome. And she was raising it, happened to have a kid, still has a kid, and, you know, could kind of balance her life. You know, I think it's a great, I think part-time gives entrepreneurs flexibility. Like, they can hire someone part-time specifically for one task or one type of task. So do we have a question? You're looking.
Oh, no, we don't have any questions, but no, you do make a really good point on that. Is I remember like my first introduction to like veteran advocacy, I was working for a community college, and the clerk there, who is also the benefits person that worked directly, and she sent all the files and did everything for the VA, she worked part-time. It was really good at her job. But because the nice thing was, well, like a lot of other colleges will put that person in the registrar's office, and that's like part of their job. But because even though it was part-time and she was focusing only on that, she was really good at that. And it's also one of those jobs, and it's going to sound strange to a lot of companies to tell them this, but some jobs, you don't give enough hours in the day for someone to complete a job. Sometimes you give us way too much time. I've worked jobs, and I'm sad to say, like, oh, this is going to take me 20 minutes. Well, I have nothing else to do, so it's not going to take me 2 hours because you told me it's due tomorrow.
Right.
And even though I'm spending extra time, like, I do get put like extra details and you can sometimes get better quality work out of it. But other times it's just like, how many times I've worked in an office job where there's literally a day I have nothing to do, but I need to be in there clock in and clock out, but there's nothing for you. The military is horrible for that as well. And I think that's a really good void of like part-time, or someone like myself as a podcaster could do another job part-time while I'm trying to create my own business. So right. You're helping out another entrepreneur while you're being an entrepreneur yourself, which is a...
Right. And I think, you know, someone can work part-time for so many different reasons, right? They can be a parent. They can be trying to start something else and they need additional income while they're doing it. They can be the person that's at retirement age, but they want to still be in the workforce. So you can have this great person that, you know, may have been running their own company and now they just want to get some of it's the social. And that mental stimulation, it can be all over the map of why someone wants to from their side. And then from the company side, again, you're getting, you know, the person you worked with, she was happy because she was very focused on her job. She wasn't being split. And figured out how to do it. I think that's the big piece for a company, though, is understanding their hours. So if you're going to hire someone to do what she was doing, you have to have an understanding of, is this a 15-hour a week job? Is this a 20? Is this an hourly, knowing that you only have X number of hours? And that's where I think companies can get themselves in trouble, is it either takes, as you said, should have only taken 20 minutes, but I made it take 2 hours. So I got filled up my time, or they thought it should only take 20 minutes and it really does take 2 hours. And they gave me 10 of those tasks.
Yeah. I've been in that situation too, where that's the worst, is like when you do a job, this is a bad management skill, is when you want to be on top of your employees to make sure they're not overtaking time. But sometimes certain projects, like just because they got this one project done in 45 minutes, don't be mad if they take another similar project, which has happened to me in work, a week to do, because it was seem similar, but those little nuances of detail, or the person you need me to contact is horrible at getting back to me, which I need certain information, which does happen in projects where it's not just the employee's fault, but maybe if they're contacting or doing something with a contractor, and that contractor is, oh, I'm going to put that off. And like, that's a problem with team management as well, which is a whole nother skill. But you also, interesting you talk about that, because I feel like part-time work in a middle area or even a higher level is something that is a missing issue, because I'm thinking through myself as a master's student, I can't work 40 hour work weeks.
Right.
I would like to have a job, but at the same point, like I can do 20 hours, I can do 15 hours, but I'm doing a master's. I have multiple degrees under my belt. I have all this experience. And then people just end up bartending, or, which is not like that. Some people love bartending, so like that's good for you, but like you don't have to put yourself to a labor or retail job if that's all you can give. And I think businesses don't recognize that potential.
Yeah, I think it's out there, but it's not discussed, right? So, you know, and what happens on the part-time is sometimes when you're trying to hire for part-time, people will throw their resume at anything that sticks. So I'd rather, if I know it's part-time, shorter term, like that, hey, I'm not sure where I'm going with this, a student that you know that they're reading it and saying it is part-time. I think when someone's applying, the applicant needs to be clear that they've read that it's a part-time job. Like that's my biggest pet peeve is, okay, I read your cover letter. I'm looking at your resume. You look really good to me. I just want to make sure, do you understand that this is part-time and it's not going to be full-time in the near future, if at all? Right? Because like I said, Erica worked for me for 5 years for accounting, and she didn't want it to be full-time, and I didn't have the work for full-time. It just isn't the way we're structured. It wasn't enough of our daily tasks. And you want to make so on both sides. Yeah, I think for a master's student and a student, it's an awesome way to get experience.
And that's also fights in that whole, yeah, but it keeps your hand in, but also it's really interesting as an American when like I get very apprehensive now against internships, because they have internships in Europe, but it's all legally, you have to be paid for an internship, and like they actually enforce the law that an internship is an internship. It's not a test out period before you hire someone, which is technically the law in the United States, but it's not ever really enforced depending on the area, which internships is another whole issue you can deep dive into, because yes, it provides a really useful skill, and like if they're using you properly, which is the problem, properly interns are there to learn, they're not there to get you coffee, and it's not supposed to be a prerequisite, but like that's a whole other argument. But it would be a good useful tool, because like that problem is like I've met people in their master's, because they just went from high school to college to master's, they're going to go to doctorate. It's like they've had jobs, but they've never worked in the industry that they're going into, because it's like, oh, I don't have time to go into it. And that's, and now you're going to walk out with a master's with no experience.
Right. And it's going to hurt you.
Yeah. And that's a problem. Like, yeah, you can volunteer and stuff too. And that's a whole other issue.
But along those lines, just quickly, I had a woman that worked for me, and she was in college, and I was hiring actually for a full-time position. And she wrote a letter and said, hey, I read your job description. I'm looking for a job. I'm a student. I can only work whatever the number of hours were. And I was like, someone with that type of initiative? Absolutely. And that happened 12 years ago. And she worked for me in college, came back and worked another time, and we're still in contact. But it just shows that like the person that the company doesn't have to advertise for a part-time job for someone to take, you know, so if you were looking at a specific field, for you to contact them and saying, hey, I understand you're hiring. I'm available 20 hours a week. I'm getting my master's. Could we talk? you know, this is why I'm interested in, you know, having someone that really wants to be there and is going to take the initiative to tell you why they're good. That's huge.
Which is also like my old boss at the Veterans Place. He gave me a really good piece of advice, which is a hard piece of advice to follow. But the best way to get job security is create a position for yourself. Mm-hmm. So just because I'm looking for jobs, half the time when I'm applying to NGOs and stuff, I'm looking for what they're asking for, but then I'll see what that NGO has, see the skills that I have, and I'm like, they don't have a podcast, or they don't have this, or they don't have experience or even covering this side of the subject. I have experience in this. Maybe they've never covered because they never thought to, or just never thought to look for someone with my skills.
Yep.
And I'll send them an email and be like that. And I've had them come back. It's like, that's a great idea. We can't do that right now. But like, and that's a whole other thing, is if you're job hunting, or what we're talking about when you're creating a business, if just because someone doesn't seem like they're open to it, it's not, you can't read what a business's philosophies completely are off the screen, mm-hmm. or what they're trying to do. And they might not even be aware your skill set exists. There's so many degrees out there that I come across a degree that I didn't need. Most of my friends here in the UK have degrees in musicology. I didn't know musicology was a thing, and they have masters in it. So one last question I was going to ask before we wrap things up, because I know you have a time constraint, is we talked a lot about work-home balance and everything like that, work-home balance and also trying to get a good flow and time management. Mm-hmm. How do you feel COVID is handling it? Because it seems like a lot more people are transitioning to work from home, which I think is going to change business from the future here on out. But do you think that it's hurting business because people are having that issue of time management, or?
I think it depends on the company. And I think the big thing for the individual and for companies is to establish boundaries, because you have the employees that, and look at output, right? So, you know, there may be people that through COVID that they've found they get up, they log in, they take care of making sure that there's nothing on their plate. They take, you know, contact whomever they need to contact. And then they may go and throw in a load of laundry or set their child up for school online. And so instead of working as often as in the States 9 to 5, they may be working off and on from 6:30 a.m. to 6 in fits and spurts and being super productive, but kind of creating, you know, handling the tasks that they need to. It's where an individual that doesn't set any boundaries, this was pre-COVID, you know, in France, I think employers are not allowed to send emails to their employees during certain hours.
That sounds so nice.
It's kind of a hard one. I don't know how that, I mean, there has to be something in their system that like holds that email and then sends it in the morning. But I think for an individual, and we've talked about entrepreneurs too, is really figuring out how to create those stops, because it's very easy, especially if you are working with clients. You know, there's one issue that you can deal with, which is your boss, if you have a boss. But if the boss is your client, you have to be okay with, hey, the phone rang at 8:30 and I'm home with my family, I'm not answering it, right?
That's a huge component of all things. Like, I have to be aware of time, because you're in Boston right now, I'm in Glasgow, even though it's my hometown is Boston. But like, there's a 5-hour time difference. So like, me responding to an email or writing an email, like, I have to remember sometimes, like, oh, it's 5 p.m. I can't do it. Like, oh, if I'm writing to someone in Seattle, I can't send it right now because it's too early, not because it's too late. So the international aspect raises it. But you also have to be comfortable, I think, as a employee to set boundaries with your employer as well. I've heard some stories of people, like friends and colleagues, where some businesses are doing things that are illegal, such as like, oh, they did the math that usually it took you 30 minutes to drive here to get to the place. So instead of you signing on at 7:30, we expect you to sign on at 7 because you were going to be out of your house anyways at that time, not realizing that's their time. That's their prep time. Like, you didn't pay them originally on their contract, or it would take you 20 minutes later. So sign off at 5:20. It's like, we need that extra 20 minutes to decompress. Yeah.
How did that work?
Like, logically, I can understand the employer's logic to a certain point if you're just looking at purely at timetables. But are you paying them extra for those 40 minutes now because you're getting that 40 minutes worth of work out of them? That's just not good employee management.
Yeah. I mean, I think it becomes, hopefully those companies that are trying to do that, it's a different issue. I think it's more the boundaries of, it's easy for someone, you know, with computer and being on their phones to just choose to, you know, if you have email on your phone back when you were working for the veterans organization, right? I, as an employer, don't know whether you're checking it after hours. So some of that is your internal boundaries. Is if I'm sending you emails after hours and I'm your boss, then there's a different conversation. Am I expecting a response or am I just doing it to get it off my plate? Because sometimes, like, you know, people do that too. It's like, oh, why are you responding? Well, you sent it to me. I'm like, well, I didn't expect you to respond. Like, so I think with COVID, I think that we're going to watch companies shift. And I think there, again, it's not a one size fits all. Some people really like working from home. Some people can't wait to get back into the office. Some companies are now going 100% virtual that weren't before because they're seeing it's less expensive for them to not have a brick and mortar office. And every individual has to sit down and say, what do I want?
Which it brings up a lot. It brings up a lot of great points too, because of the fact that we're getting away from brick and mortars. It also, this is like a whole nother subject, but it can also talk about how we can use people, I won't say use people, but allow people into industries that we never thought before because of disability. Because yep. It's like, oh, we can't have this person in because we need to get special and we can't afford that special equipment. But if they already have it at their house and they can do the task, why not? Or like if there's a physical, that like you can't hire someone because they're in a wheelchair and your door physically can't allow it, which technically is against OSHA code, but cities that are old, like Glasgow and Boston, there are areas that are like that. There are
and there's not much a business can do. Like business can't change certain things or it just becomes arduous for the individual that they say, I'd like to work for this company, but I don't want to come in through the back door, through the service ramp and all of that, because that's the only way into the building. Yeah, because technically there's workarounds for all of them now, but
some of them are not distinguished, and that's an understandable point. Like you're being treated differently, and it's just like, but I think that's going to help a lot of situations like that. And also it is going to be a little interesting because certain jobs, like being an accountant, did you really even have to go into the office? And like, I'm going to be curious if people are going to be willing to take pay cuts because they want to live where they want to live, but also they're saving money on car insurance and gas and bus fare and all these other different things where you might actually.
Yeah. I mean, I think some, you know, there's some things that in our company that we can't do remotely because we still send out hard mail for certain things. Well, I have equipment here. I don't want to do, I'm not taking that. I mean, I guess I could move the equipment, but I think again, yeah, I think people will have to, it opens the doors for employers and it opens the doors for employees to think through what really works for their company and how do we create the culture and the environment that we want. And, you know, I would challenge anyone, whether they're working full-time or part-time, to say, what do I like, you know, and what works for me? You know, do I want to work from home? Do I want to work in an office? Do I want to be full-time? Do I want to be part-time? Do I want to be specialized? What culture do I want to be, big, small, all of that stuff? What gets me going?
Was there any last minute things that you thought we should have covered or any final thoughts on something we talked about?
I don't know. I think this has been great. I think, you know, so I thank you for the time and I'll make sure to send you a link for TAP for your show notes, if that's okay. Perfect. So if anyone's interested in it, we'll give them that. And hopefully we gave some food for thought for people, especially your friends that are looking to start an NGO or just considering it, of some things to think about. And if they do it, I hope they're successful. I don't want it to sound like I'm against it. I'm not, but this has been fun.
Oh, thank you so much for being on. And thank you for listening to the Rights and Wrongs podcast. If you enjoyed listening to Linda Guild and all that stuff, feel free to contact her at TAP. I'm sure she'd be more than welcome for that. If you want to be on the podcast, feel free to contact me at rightsandwrongspodcast@gmail.com. We also have articles that are written by people like you. So if you want to write an article on a subject you don't feel comfortable on being on a podcast, check it out at www.rightsandwrongspodcast.com. If you want to be on the podcast, contact me either on the website or the email, and I'll be more than happy to talk to you about it. If you want to help me support my business, I do have a Patreon at Rights and Wrong Pod. I also do have a donate page, or you can just buy some cool merch such as stickers, hats, and even mugs. I did want to thank you again, Linda, for being on, and thank you for listening to the Rights and Wrongs podcast. Have a great day.